Welcome to Kids Considered, where two pediatricians discuss children's health topics of interest to parents in a podcast with new subjects considered every episode. I'm Dr. Lena Vanderlist.
And I'm Dr. Dean Blumberg.
And we're both pediatricians at UC Davis Children's Hospital in Sacramento, California. We have a very special episode planned for today. We're working on a series on the neonatal intensive care unit, also known as NICU. And today I have the honor of talking with one of my dear childhood friends, Lori Lieb. Lori is not our usual guest. She is not in medicine or related to pediatrics. She's the creative director and part owner of a beauty company called Bodyography. But really, her most important job is being a mom to two amazing boys, Maximo, who's 3 years old, and Jones, who is now 8 months old. She's also a fierce NICU mom because Jones was born premature at 25 weeks and spent almost 4 months in the NICU before coming home with her. So I wanted to invite Lori to talk to us today because really her optimism and commitment throughout her whole journey has truly floored me, and her perspective and experience could be so helpful to others who are in similar situations or who have loved ones that are in this situation. So Lori, thank you so much for joining us on Kids Considered today.
Thank you, Lena. I'm so happy to be here.
I would love for you to just set us up by sharing your own personal story, your experience with your pregnancy and your early delivery with Jones.
So I started out with a really normal pregnancy. It was actually an amazing pregnancy. I was super active. I was still working. Obviously, I have a toddler, so I felt great. At 22 weeks, I came back from a short, not grueling work trip in Canada. And I felt like what felt like a blood clot pass. And I was like, oh my God, that feels like my period. This is really weird. And didn't think anything of it. And then another like hour later, it happened again. So I called the labor and delivery and they're like, just come in. So I go in and they're checking. They're like, okay, that's a fair amount of blood to be passing at 22 weeks. We're going to keep you for the night. And I was like, what? Okay, fine. My husband's out of town. My son's at school. So I ended up staying the night, and that stint lasted 3.5 weeks. So I was there. They called it a subchorionic hematoma, which now I'm familiar with is like a broad term used for vaginal bleeding during pregnancy. It doesn't really mean they know where it's coming from or why. So I was in the hospital. They were monitoring my bleeding every day and having discussions with me about what to do in case I deliver, about viability, which is 24 weeks here in this state. I'm not sure if it changes in other states, but we had to have all these really hard decisions. At this point, I'm not in any pain. The baby is checking out fine. I'm not having contractions. Like, I'm just bleeding. And I'm like, maybe I'm just going to be one of those people that bleeds throughout their pregnancy. I stayed out of forums. I listened to my doctors. I really just tried to have like the eye on the prize of keeping baby in. They discharged me and I went home, and like 2 days later, I was laying in bed and I started to feel tightening, like, oh my God, these are really bad Braxton Hicks. And it just did not stop. And then at that point I was like, I'm going to set a contraction timer. So I set a contraction timer, and within like 6 minutes, it went beep, beep, go to the hospital. And I'm like, my husband again is out of town at this point. And I am just like, what's going on? I called an ambulance and they come and get me and they take me to the hospital. And they're like, okay, you are having contractions, but your cervix is closed and not soft. Like, baby's not coming. So at this point, I was 25 weeks. So I got the 2 rounds of steroids, which I'm really grateful for. The steroids are going to help to increase the chances of baby's lungs maturing outside of the womb. But then I was discharged again. So the contractions stop. I'm at home. I go to put Max to bed and I'm laying in bed and I just get this rush of just like wooziness. Oh my God, what's happening? And then I start having back-to-back contractions for 8 hours, because when you're having what I now ended up having a placenta abruption, when that happens, you don't have a break between contractions. You have rolling contractions. So that went on for 8 hours. I finally woke my husband up, who was home, thank God. And he took me to the hospital. And I get there and I get wheeled up in a wheelchair and I get up to the triage room in labor and delivery. And I won't let anyone touch me. I like really had to go to the bathroom. They wouldn't let me. Finally, they did. And then I came out and I lay down and I was like, I think I feel the head. And they're like, no, that is the entire sac. And they're like, Lori, you have to push. And I gave like two really big pushes and a tiny little blue baby pretty much came out in the sac. Like it was the craziest thing ever.
When you and I talked after this all happened, and you know, full disclosure, Lori's sister is my best friend. And so they drove themselves to the hospital that time. And 6 minutes, right, Jones was delivered. And I was talking to Lori about deliveries of 25 plus weekers at UC Davis. Like, we are planning for those. We have the team. We have like, this is the person that's going to do the airway. This is the person that's going to put in the lines. This is the person that's going to, like, it is a huge orchestrated effort. And it is so amazing. That team had to really hustle to get down there to you and Jones. But I want to hear more about those first few days after Jones was born, like how you were feeling, kind of the overwhelming emotions, mixed emotions, I'm sure. Tell me a little bit more about that.
After you deliver, it's very much like the clinical part of birth. So they sent me to my room and I just felt super numb because I had all the adrenaline to be caring for a baby and there was no one to care for. And that adrenaline didn't help me later on and it didn't help me then. So they immediately come in and are like, it's time to breastfeed. And, you know, you don't have the baby, you don't have the smell, you don't have the experience. So to be honest, like it was devastating. And I was there for one night and then I went home. So leaving, and my husband wasn't with me. He was with my toddler. So leaving the hospital without a baby is very unique and honestly heartbreaking. And you kind of like go into provider survivor mode. You know, I was like, okay, I provide milk and I survive for my family. And that's really it. But I also felt like a mixed feeling of relief because I wasn't in the hospital with unanswered questions for a prolonged period of time. When I went home, my hormones were insane. I had like this crazy adrenaline and no one to care for. So it was wild, but I really said to myself, Lena, I was like, you're bringing this child home. So now the work begins and like, you just have to like put your head down and focus on your family. And like, I had lots of questions and I cried all day, every day, like all day in Paul's arms, Paul cry. I mean, it was just lots of tears, but we were like, we're going to get through this together.
Totally. And that attitude that you have always had from the beginning, I think is, you know, one of the reasons that Jones has done so well, of course, in combination with his team and others. And the reason that Maximo, right, like your 3-year-old has been able to thrive through this situation. And I also want to know, like, sort of what some of the most helpful advice you had was during those first few days. And then maybe also, like, what some things that may have happened either before delivery or after that maybe weren't that helpful.
The NICU team, amazing. The advice that they gave me before baby was a viability for our personal choices was really helpful. They explained how difficult it would be to have a baby 22 to 24 weeks. Them coming up and talking to us was amazing. What was unhelpful was the lack of answers I had while I was in the hospital and going through this bleeding. Like, I had like 6 different doctors who were all telling me different things. Some people were like, some people just bleed and, you know, like you can just go home. And I was like, okay, if I go home, I need to know, what is my life? Can I do the 6 work trips I have planned before this baby's due? Can I pick my son up and down? Can I go to Pilates? Like, what can I do in my life? No one really had answers. And I was like, this is really confusing to me. So you have to advocate for yourself in these scenarios. And you only know what you know, and what's done is done. But after he arrived, the best advice I got from the doctors were the NICU is a roller coaster, which it 100% is. Your baby is going to have really amazing days and take like 10 strides forward, and you're going to be high on life and see something of a future, and then all of a sudden they're going to get a staph infection, pneumonia, a neck scare, back onto the ventilator that's like 3 steps back from what they already on. So for me, it was like stayed present, and that really helped me. And like, I celebrated the wins, and I kind of let the losses and the hard times kind of pass by. And that was definitely the best advice that I got.
Yeah, the NICU is a complete roller coaster. And, you know, for our listeners, NEC stands for necrotizing enterocolitis. It's unfortunately a relatively common big complication in prematurity. And we'll talk more about that when we talk with our neonatologists later. But I think that, you know, taking it that one day at a time, celebrating any successes, understanding that there are going to be bumps in the road is so valuable. And I would love to hear kind of like how you would describe the NICU to someone who has never been there before.
The NICU is literally an underground society that I never knew existed. I knew it was there. I knew that babies go to NICU. I had no idea that it was this like bustling, like airport. Like that's the only way I can think of. It's like an airport. Like people are checking in and checking out, and some are there longer than others. And it is the most quiet place in the world and the loudest, because in the beginning, like, you know, they're sensitive to light. They're sensitive to sound. You're not even meant to whisper to them or anything. Like they're in these isolettes, which are these plexiglass temperature controlled cribs kind of, that are fully covered. And there's a button you push when you open it. There's lots of sanitizing happening. And Jones was on a oscillating ventilator for a long time, which are the really high, intense ones. He needed it. And it's like his whole body would shake, and then they had to put him on morphine to stop the shaking, and it sounded horrible. And so it was just like deafening sound. But also on the flip side, these nurses make it like such a wonderful environment for you too. And they would take his footprints and put his little feet up. And I brought in pictures of Paul and Maximo and myself, and I put it up there so the nurses would like also know who we are. And they wanted to be a part of this experience as much as I needed them to like be my friends too. It's just a crazy place. They act so quickly. I mean, it's like working on little model cars that's lives are on the line. Like these babies are so tiny.
Totally. I mean, in full disclosure, like when I was going through my residency, NICU was my least favorite rotation because you have to be so precise in NICU. Like with these little babies, like, you know, Jones, when they're getting their IV fluids or they're getting their antibiotic or their morphine, you literally miss your dose by like 0.005 milligrams and you can like kill the baby, right? And it's such an exact science. I have so much respect for the physicians and the nurses and, I mean, everybody that executes that job in the NICU. One thing that other people have asked me, or I've wondered when I've had a friend that's delivered early and their child's in the NICU, is like, what can I get them that might make this journey easier for them? So do you have like a NICU mom essentials list that you can share with our listeners?
When you're postpartum and you're in the NICU for hours and hours, you have to be fueling yourself with food and water and everything to make milk. For the first 2 weeks, I couldn't hold them at all. So you're just sitting there. I've never had more screen time in my life than the 104 days you're in the NICU. You want a long iPhone charger because there's so many plugs and things there. Like I wanted to stay out of the way in like my area. Big giant water bottle, a cooler bag. This is what you're going to keep your water in, your snacks, your food, all the milk that you have to bring from home that you've pumped, as well as the milk that you're pumping while you're there. So with that, a cooler bag that has like all your stuff and the frozen blocks to keep everything cool. They have like a whole milk system there, which is pretty intense. They give you labels, so extra labels and pen and everything you need for your milk, which is a lot of stuff. As the baby gets a little bit older and they turn like the humidity off in the isolette, you can decorate the isolette. So I, of course, brought all the cute swaddles. And they would wrap the mat that the babies lay on and the swaddles. I had these like little cotton, like bamboo breast pads, the ones that absorb the milk. And I would keep them in my bra and I would leave them in the isolette so that he could smell me. And I would also put stuff in there that I could take home with me. When I was pumping, I would like sniff his beanie. I actually forgot about that until right now. I still have his little beanie. It kind of smelled like hospital, but it also smelled like him, and I would cry every time. But it did help. Like, you need those hormones, those emotions to make milk. all your pump parts. They make sure they give you everything. So when you're in the NICU, like, get all the pump parts for the Medela pumps. Like, they give you extras of everything, bags. You don't have to worry about buying milk bags. They have all of that. A NICU diary, and you can put, like, some setbacks, wins, what doctor was on. I would log the weight, every medication they're on, because the doctors come in and they're like, blah, 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 blah. And half the things I'm like, what are you saying? And then the nurses would be like, what they meant by that is. That NICU diary really helped me remember, because I'd go home and then have to tell Paul everything that happened from that day. So that really helped. What else? Pillow, eventually, because I would hold him and they had, like, not the best pillow. So I brought my own pillows in, and then I started bringing blankets, because when you're holding the baby, they're so tiny and they can't keep their temperature. You want to wrap them in something warm and fuzzy, and headphones, because you want to be quiet in there too. Just respect to the other parents as well.
So you talked about the roller coaster that is the NICU and some of the setbacks that really happen, I would say, for the vast, vast majority of NICU babies. So just like you said, there are 5 steps forward. You get off the oscillator and you're on a regular ventilator. And then all of a sudden, oh no, you know, he's back on it. Or all of a sudden there's an infection, or, you know, you started doing feeds and now they're not tolerating them. So I liked your advice in that you just have to kind of let it roll off and celebrate the wins and the progress. But any other advice? Because these moments can feel so overwhelming, I think, to families, just how to get through those setbacks.
The experience in the NICU is definitely not like a linear experience. You can't ever predict what's going to happen. Like, something I learned very early on is Jones is my boss. Jones is my teacher. And he taught me through my pregnancy, patience, understanding, relaxing, everything. And then as a mom to a NICU baby, he's also taught me so much and continues to. So I think it's really important to learn that, like, your NICU baby is your teacher, and you're going to learn so much about yourself through them and through this experience. So obviously, like, things happen. I mean, Joan's lungs were such an issue, even with the 2 rounds of steroids, the breathing, just, he was on the oscillator, off the oscillator, on lots of oxygen support. And then it went down again, and then back and forth. And with that comes infection. Obviously, every time you intubate and extubate or have a PICC line in and out, you are prone to infections in the NICU. It just happens no matter how clean and sanitary everyone is. So he ended up getting pneumonia, then he got an infection. And then, of course, the one time Paul and I decided to go away for one night for our 10-year wedding anniversary, which, remind me to talk about taking time for yourself at some point, because I think that's a huge thing that people don't do and needs to be discussed. We went away. I get a phone call, which they never call, really, unless it's bad news. Jones potentially has NEC, the necrotizing endocarditis. Of course, I look it up, which I don't normally do, but I wasn't at the hospital, and it's fatal and can be fatal. And I'm like, oh my God, what do we do? Anyway, they said, don't leave. We have it under control. We had a note in here that said that you had noticed the baby's tummy was a little distended yesterday. So we, like, thank you so much for making that note. That really helped us. Everything's gonna be okay. Anyway, we go back. With this, like, you have to take it one day at a time. You have to understand that the doctors know best and that they're going to do everything they can to keep your baby alive without having to intervene to the max potential. So they're always going to advocate for you. However, you also know your baby best. You are with this baby. If you're able to be there every day, you're with this baby every day. The nurses' shift change. The doctors change. Like, one doctor goes away for 4 days, a lot has changed. So if you notice something about your baby, like, you have to say something. And I think a lot of the times you go, you know, your confidence is like, well, they're the doctors. They'll know. Like, I'm probably not seeing anything. If you see something, say something.
I think that's so important, because in all of medicine, for sure, but especially in the NICU and in pediatrics really in general, like, it's a care team. And you as the parent are really, like, you're kind of like the head of that team. You are the expert in your child, and we talk about this a lot. And you did start to mention about self-care during this process, and I don't think I had any formal questions on it, but I do totally think that this is so important because mental health issues in specifically moms, but of course, moms and dads in the NICU is abundant, as I'm sure you've experienced. And so I want you to tell us a little bit about how you cared for yourself and took time for yourself and how you would recommend others do it.
Those of you who have had babies or who have watched their partner have a baby, you understand that you lose so much of yourself in those initial moments. But I always say to moms who are in the NICU, like, you're preterm babies. Your baby's not meant to be here. Like, you have a lot of unfinished business of your pregnancy. Like, did you have a baby moon plan? Decorating the nursery, spending time with friends, a shower. Like, there's all these things that you miss out on when you have a preterm baby. And I think it's really important to still celebrate all that. And, you know, for me, I had to balance my being a business owner, my toddler. I'm going to set a standard for what I want to achieve while I'm here. And I'm going to let my care team know that we're not going to be there at night. We are going to be there all day during the day. And then I want you guys to respect our choice that we're going to spend evenings at home with our toddler who needs us. And then after Maximo goes to sleep, Paul and I are going to stay up, talk, be there for one another, go on date nights, do things that we needed to do to maintain our sanity as a couple and be able to parent these two children. And we would call into the NICU every single night at 10:30, 11 o'clock. They would expect my call. So I would be there on time for cares every single time. I was super respectful of the rounds that the nurses were doing because they would know I was going to come in. I would do care. So I would do diaper and the ointment and whatever else I was able to do, I would do. And they would expect me. And I just feel like having that mutual respect for each other, for your care team, for your own schedule, like, it just makes everything run smoother because you're like having to remember to hydrate and eat and pump. Oh my God, pumping 8 to 10 times a day. Do you guys know how long that is? In the beginning, I'm like, am I being selfish that I'm like carrying on with life? But I had to, in order to be there and be strong for Jones and sit there all those hours, like I had to sleep for 8 hours a night. And I'm really grateful that I was able to do that. And I'm also know how lucky and fortunate I am that I was able to work bedside. But I brought my computer and in the beginning, I'm like, they're going to judge me that I'm working. No, they knew. I told them what I do for my job and that no one replaced me in my business and I have to work. And it was just a mutual respect all around. And it really helped us like set a good foundation for our life outside of the NICU too.
We've talked a few times about pumping and breast milk and breastfeeding and all that comes with that. And you know, Mira was born at 35 weeks and she wasn't great at latching. And so we had to do the pumping around the clock for a long time, too. And now I can definitely say I have like a little bit of PTSD and like trauma associated with my pump. I can't even imagine what NICU mom's trauma is around the pump. I want to hear a little bit about why giving your breast milk to Jones was so important to you and sort of how you worked to ensure that this was something that you could do for him.
For me, breastfeeding was always my goal for both my kids. With Maximo, it came really easy and I demand fed for like just over 2 years and it was great. So my plan was always to do the same thing for Jones. Obviously, it was not the same because Jones was born so early, 15 weeks early, but you are meant to pump the same amount that you would breastfeed a child. So that's 8 to 10 times a day. I let them know from the beginning, my goal is to breastfeed. So you have to let them know if that's your goal, great. If it's not, exclusively pump, fine. But they're going to always make sure that you know how to bottle feed the proper way. And I learned all these tricks with kind of holding the baby's face with your thumb and your pointer finger so that you are like, you're mimicking a breast and kind of helping them suck and putting your hand underneath their chin. So then around 33 weeks, was when they finally let me start breastfeeding. And the breastfeeding was supplementary. But he latched and everyone was like so amazed by him because this is rare for a baby that was born so early to just instinctively know what to do. And I was like, something's on my side. This is amazing.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I mean, it was so amazing that he was able to do it in the first place and like that he got all of that good milk. And just for our listeners, which we'll talk about more when we talk a little bit about nutrition in the NICU, breast milk is always the goal to have that in. Premature babies do need some formula in addition to help with a weight gain. And that's really important to help the lungs continue to grow, but also like bone mineralization and bone growth. So usually in a lot of cases, what will happen, even if you do go home breastfeeding, is that you'll do at least two bottles of a premature kind of formulation of formula in addition to the breast milk. So that's great. I want to hear about that moment when the team told you that you guys were going home, because I'm sure that there are so many mixed emotions and feelings. And what did you do to prepare for this moment? And what did it feel like overall?
So first of all, we went home on due date, which is crazy. So October 15th, we went home. It happens very fast because the days leading up to it, they just like start weaning him off of stuff. And then he ends up being just like a baby in a crib at the NICU. And they don't want just like healthy babies in the crib. They want them home. When they told us we were leaving, I was so excited and like beyond terrified. I'm a really confident mom, but I was a really anxious newborn mom with Maximo too. Maximo was born during COVID. So like, honestly, we haven't had a really easy run with this. So the hardest part for me was not having the postpartum hormones that keep you surviving. When you go home, when you bring your NICU baby home 4 months after you've had a baby, your period's back. You're not postpartum. Like you're still postpartum, but you're not. You're not running off of those hormones that like keep you up at night, that hear the cries, that like that horrible feeling. Really, that horrible feeling doesn't exist anymore. So for me, the snoo for me was a peace of mind. It's The Happiest Baby on the Block by Dr. Karp, I think is his name. He invented it. It's a sleep vessel that has a swaddle built in and your baby is like in and can't move. And my fear of this child rolling, the sounds NICU babies make, they're like so snorty. They always sound like they're like, they can't breathe, but they're fine. So every second I was like, oh my God, is he breathing? So the snoo helped me in that sense. And then having a monitor that tracks breathing, that shows you that breath is happening, respiratory rates per minute or per second. That also was a peace of mind for me. The snoo and the monitor were really important to me, making sure I had my pump set up. And honestly, like he didn't come home on oxygen. A lot of babies come home on oxygen and feeding tubes. He came home like a little healthy baby.
Oh, yes. I know. What a wild time. And one of the things I remember when you had him home was you had bought this little sign that went on his stroller and on his car seat, like, you know, that attached to the stroller, that said something like, I'm a micro preemie, like your germs are very scary to me, like stay over there, essentially.
I still have that on both his doona and his stroller because people touch. And I would prefer no one to do that. I guess also with bringing home a NICU baby, like you have to have really firm boundaries. We set rules, you know, you can kiss feet only, touch feet only. No one come anywhere near us if you're sick. We just would assume that people would respect us. You know, the first like 2 months, we were definitely like a little bit more cautious with what we were doing. But I wanted to like begin normal life as soon as possible.
Totally. And, you know, fast forward to now, it's been so fun to get to see him grow. I would love you just to kind of give us a day in the life for you guys right now. And then also just any last advice that you have for families who are in a situation like this.
Day in the life is pretty normal. I have a nanny who's full time, except for Tuesdays are my days with Jones, and it's my favorite day of the week. Sometimes I bring him into the office. He had a bunch of appointments in the beginning, your normal newborn checkup appointments, like every week, every 2 weeks. But he also sees a nutritionist every few months who happens to be the same nutritionist who was in the NICU. So it's so nice to see a familiar face. I think it's really important to understand that your NICU baby, your preterm micro preemie baby, if you have, is never going to be the same prior to 2 years of age to any other full-term baby. They developed outside of the womb in an artificial environment. And there are going to be some differences and some setbacks. So I don't look at anything. I don't look at anyone else to see and judge his success and his growth. I look at him and him only. I don't relate it to my son. I don't relate it to my sister's babies. I don't relate it to other NICU babies. I just relate it to him, and I'm proud of everything that he does. And that helps me like stay in the moment. And if I have questions, I ask my doctor. You know, people want to be there for you. So people say like, what can I do to help? Tell them to schedule a meal on the meal train. That is the best and easiest way. You don't have to worry about food, and your family at home needs to be fed as well.
I will make sure that our listeners have access to your blog and your social media so that they can see your journey and follow along.
That wraps up this episode of Kids Considered.
You can find more information on our website, kidsconsidered.ucdavis.edu.
Follow us on Twitter @KidsConsidered.
And Instagram @KidsConsidered.
If you have feedback on this show or topics you would like us to discuss in the future, we would love to hear from you.
Please call us. Our number is 916-915-3388.
Or email us at kidsconsidered@gmail.com.
Please rate us on iTunes or wherever you subscribe to your podcasts.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us for our next podcast.
Kids Considered is sponsored by UC Davis Children's Hospital.